I want to begin by thanking Dee Teitelbaum. I don't think many of you in this room understand how instrumental he has been to keeping UConn great. I think we all owe him a round of applause. So. So, I'll tell you, in my experience, commencement speakers are awful. There's something about these robes, in addition to generating somnolence, also allows the speaker to pontificate, and particularly about the future. I mean, I don't know how many commencements you've gone to, but everyone seems to understand the future. One of the stock crystal ball items for commencement is globalization. And I acknowledge we live in a global society, and there's some good to it. But it's also true that there are now folks out there in Asia, in South America, in Africa, and in Europe trying to take the job that you want, and will often do it for half the price. Never heard that from a commencement speaker. Commencement speakers also like to wax eloquent about the wonders of advanced technology and instant communication in the modern world. But they don't mention to you that that same technology tracks your location, your purchases, your TV viewing habits, and more, making privacy almost impossible. But most of all, commencement speakers love to pontificate about medical technology and assure us that the shelves of the future will be full not only of new knees and hips, but of new bladders, kidneys, and hearts to be rung up at the checkout counter. But what they don't tell us is that new brains are not on the immediate horizon, the organ that has always been in shortest supply. In fact, I don't know any more about the future than you do, or than your parents do, nor can I predict the future any better than anyone else. Instead, today, I just want to tell you one thing. That is, although neither you nor I can predict the future, we can shape the future. We can shape the future. Well, how can you do this? Well, I'm going to give you 9 pieces of advice. I would have given you 10, but that seemed too biblical for me. I want you to know this is the same advice I would give my children if they would listen. But I hope you will listen just carefully for these next few minutes. So, advice number 1 is PHILO. PHILO. This is the acronym that stands for first in, last out. Now this, I'll tell you, had something originally to do with bank accounts in the days before there was daily compounding of interest. But that's not what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about PHILO, first in, last out, in a different sense. So I'll tell you, the first administrator I recruited many years ago was a young guy right out of business school. He's now the vice president of finance at a major health center. He was a talented guy. But what impressed me the most about him, and impressed everyone else who knew him, was that he came in early and he left late. PHILO, work hard pays. So this was said best, I think, by Indira Gandhi. So I don't know if many of you have been to Bethesda, but there's actually a Barnes & Nobles there, and outside the Barnes & Nobles, there are a series of plaques, and she has a quote that they've put on a plaque outside the bookstore. So I couldn't remember I like this quote, but I couldn't remember what exactly the words were last week, and I wanted to tell them to you. So I called up Bethesda. It was raining out in Bethesda that day, and a wonderful clerk actually ran outside, copied down this quote, and came in and read it to me. So here's what Indira Gandhi said. She said, there are 2 kinds of people, those who do the work and those who take credit. Try to be in the first group. There's less competition. So. So, advice number two, finish. There are many starters, there are few finishers. Follow through is the most reproducible attribute of successful people. Finish what you start. Advice number three, build your team. So I was talking with Mark Shankman last week, the chairman of our foundation board, about this address, and I asked him what he wanted to tell you. He's a wonderful, thoughtful person. So he thought for a while, and he said that in his experience, he had never met a successful person who did not advocate for himself or herself. So toot your own horn. Toot your own horn was what he wanted to tell you. But as I listened to Mark, I had a slightly different thought about what he was telling me. You need some folks on your team throughout your life, like Mark, mentors who can guide you through the twists and turns of your career. So build your team of advisors and mentors starting right now. Really important. Advice number four. Be prepared for your second career. You're going to live a long time. The lifespan of humans is increasing dramatically. Four-generation families are now not uncommon. You need a real second career when you retire from the first one. You must keep up your interests besides golf. So, advice number five. Don't take cheap shots. So you cast a big shadow. That shadow is drawn by the small acts of kindness and consideration that will mark you as a person. And it is what, and I guarantee this, people will remember about you and say about you when you are not there to hear. So people view you through a simple lens, the lens of how you behave when you think you're not being noticed. So my advice is simple, no cheap shots. Advice number six, follow your heart. So I'm a cancer doctor. I have had the privilege of taking care of many, many people at the end of their lives. I can tell you that for them, money does not matter, fame does not matter, virtually all that matters is their family and close friends. So keep connected to your family and the friends that surround you today. And remember now that UConn, it will forever be part of your family. So Steve Jobs, shortly after he learned he had pancreatic cancer, spoke to the Stanford commencement. And he said this, remembering you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason for you not to follow your heart. So I think this was even better said in the last line of Thornton Wilder's great novel, The Bridge Over San Luis Rey. If you don't remember, this is a story of a footbridge that's collapsed in South America, and the families were trying to understand this seemingly inexplicable moment of senseless tragedy. Sounds familiar. This is a novel I read when I was 16, and I've never gone back to reread it, but I can remember that last line as if I had read it yesterday. Now, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but you can Google it now. Advice seven, do something for your country. Democracy is fragile. History argues quite articulately, quite strongly, that dictators and tyranny are the historical norm, not democracy. Protecting your country and its freedoms is your job. There's a quote from Thomas Jefferson that is inscribed on the Jeffin Memorial that's almost impossible to read because it's so high up in the rotunda that you actually have to twirl your body 360 degrees to read it. It's worth reading. It says, "For I have sworn on the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man." Probably a long time since someone has felt so strongly or written so articulately about democracy. Your turn. Your turn. Vice 8. Test yourself against something important. Behind every great event, every great social change, every important scientific discovery is one person with conviction and passion. Some of you, you know, the stats would argue might have a little trouble finding your first job at graduation. This could be the greatest gift of your life, a chance to join the Peace Corps, join Teach America, or tackle a problem you define as worthy of your full effort and passion. Do it. Do it. Advice 9. This is my last advice, and I'm going to tell, this is a little story, and it's a true story. So I grew up in northern New Jersey, not too far from here. So in grammar school, we never had much money to go on field trips of any type, so we would often go to the spot where Washington slept. And I can tell you, he slept a lot, and he slept only 5 minutes from our school, so unfortunately for us, there were a bunch of five-minute sort of trips to for our school trips. And I believe this relieved our teachers of dealing with the rowdy bunch in a school bus. But then, one day when I was about 9, we ventured a full hour away from the school. And we went to Menlo Park, New Jersey, which is the site of the research labs of Thomas Alva Edison. So I was leaving, and in a gift shop as I was leaving, I saw a shiny white cardboard copy of a sign that Thomas Edison kept over his desk his entire life. The quote is from Sir Joshua Reynolds. It says, "There is no expedient to which man will not resort to avoid the real labor of thinking." So, cost me 25 cents back then, tells you how old I am, and I always kept it with me. Then when I finally got to my first office as a junior faculty at Stanford, I wanted to hang it up, and I looked everywhere, and I couldn't find it, and it was really frustrating to me. I don't know what happened to it. So I called the gift shop back in Menlo Park and found this really old lady who was on the phone, and I asked her if she had this plaque, and she said, "Oh yeah, I remember this. We don't sell that anymore." So I said, "Well, why don't you sell it anymore?" And she said, "No one understood what it meant. But I think you understand. There is no expedient to which man will not resort to avoid the real labor of thinking." UConn is not a trade school. You have been taught to think and to think critically. So unplug your iPod, embrace silence, solve problems, create. Thank you.